on me. It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me. What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me. It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me. What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about?
Alrighty, guys, welcome to another episode of the Auto Bid. I am Aaron Robinson, joined as always by my twin brother Andrew Robinson. Today we've got a special guest. We have the North Carolina A&T Aggies head coach Willie Jones. Coach, thanks for coming on with us today.
Oh man, it's great, man. It's great. It's always good to talk some hoops, man. What's going on?
Doing well, man. And for those of you who don't know, obviously, Drew and I played at Coppin State, three the opportunity back when Coach Jones was coaching the MEAC. We had the opportunity to play against Coach Jones' team, and we beat them. You know, they came on down to Baltimore, man, and caught that L down there at Coppin State, man. And obviously, that was the year that the COVID canceled the NCAA, canceled the conference tournament, man. So we didn't get a chance to see you guys again down there in Norfolk, but I know it would have been a lot of fun if we could have made that happen down there for sure.
Hey, man, listen, I always think about it. You know, Coppin State Coach Dixon, my man, the only coach in the MEAC that I didn't get a chance to beat. He's the only one. And that game was a barn burner. Oh, yeah. And I think you guys ended up winning by 2 or 3 points late there. And those 2 or 3 points, actually, that one game, you know, stopped us from being regular season champions. And so it was a battle, man, down there in Baltimore that night.
Nah, definitely was, man. I never forget that game. Yo, y'all might have had about 4 or 5 alley-oops that game. And Quay Parker had a couple. Hey, I'm like, yo, like, these dudes looking like the freaking Monstars out here, yo. I'm like, yo, I've never seen this type of high-flying performance from me at team. But y'all was definitely Lob City Clippers back then. Y'all, I'm sure y'all probably still do that now, but back then, y'all had some dudes on that team that could get up on that rim.
Hey, man, listen, I told the guys, because we think that game was our fourth game, and we had beaten Maryland Eastern Shore by like 30. We beat Delaware State by like almost 40. And you guys came in there ready to go. And
I think we were over 4 at that point. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think you guys was backs against the wall. Yeah. And I remember you guys were warming up. And the clock was almost at 0. And I was like, man, where's Coach Dixon at, man? Coach Dixon didn't come out the locker room, man. The game was started already. I was like, man, is Coach coming to the game? And so, man, that was actually my first loss, man, as a MEAC coach at that game against Copp.
Well, hey, man, definitely great to reminisce and go down memory lane. And before we get into the meat of this interview, man, I want to remind everybody watching this, make sure you guys are giving us a like. You're giving us a rating, 5 stars only, please, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening to this podcast. Tell a friend about the Auto Bid, man. It truly does go a long way. Make sure you go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Also, tap into our content on YouTube. We're on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. And as always, make sure you guys are streaming my guy, Pull Up Tay's music. That was him on the intro. It's going to be him again at the end on the outro. So make sure you guys are listening to my guy's music. But Coach Jones, man, we talked a little bit about it, man. Obviously, 2 years ago, and now I think it was 1920, so almost 3 seasons ago, you guys were in the MEAC. You guys have spent a year in the Big South, and now you guys are headed to the CAA for your first season, man. So, I mean, what has this past few years been like with all the movement? Obviously, these have been your first 2 years as a head coach, man. You guys have been, you know, this is going on your third conference now, man. So what has that all that been like for you?
Moving on up like the Jeffersons, man. We're moving on up, man. Yo guys, man, you know, I'm blessed to be a head basketball coach, head D1 coach, blessed to be the head coach at North Carolina A&T. And during this time period of transition, with different schools, whether it be PWI or HBCUs, trying to reshuffle the deck and put themselves in position to move into the next, whatever, man, century, 2 centuries, trying to change the narrative, man. I'm excited. I'm glad to be the head coach at A&T. And this challenge, man, of pushing our brand, not just A&T's brand, but the HBCU brand into the new space, man. It's just unbelievably excited. I love the challenge of doing it. I've really taken it on. Our staff and our programs taking it off head on. I've been a head coach for 3 years, and I've been in three different leagues all 3 years. And excited about the CAA. I think this will be a place that we stay for a while, so we can definitely put our roots in the ground and really start to build this thing.
Now, Coach, man, I want to ask, because there's a lot of people out here who, you know, will look at it and they'll be like, man, A&T, you guys are one of the premier HBCUs, right? And like, you know, why would they leave the MEAC and go to a Big South or a CAA, which is obviously these PWI conferences? Can you speak to kind of just the reasoning for, you know, why it makes sense for you guys to make these moves? For maybe somebody who doesn't really understand from the outside looking in, you know, why a school like yourself would want to leave kind of the HBCU mold and branch out like this?
You know, the thing that's not going to change, we're always going to be an HBCU. The culture of being HBCU has nothing to do with sports. You know what I mean? Sports is a part of it. And I think what a lot of people miss, and I think it's more so the older generation, they miss those traditional games, those rivalry games, you know, and everybody has different reasons for making decisions that they make. And, you know, our chancellor, who's obviously the head honcho in this whole decision-making process, you know, one of his visions as a leader was to academically put North Carolina A&T in the same breath as a Delaware, a Drexel, you know, some of these schools that have degrees that people across the world, they talk about in terms of jobs and, you know, what can happen for the average student with having a degree that's coupled with some of those name institutions. Now, when those decisions are made, obviously athletics is a bystander. And, you know, man, I think players, you guys were players. Players want to play against the best competition night in and night out. And I think all as athletes, we want to compete in that space. And I think what's held back some of the better athletes, not saying that the MEAC doesn't have good players now, because they do, but to attract some of the high profile kids. And I always say this, guys, it's a big difference between the Big South, the MEAC, the CAA, and the ACC, all right? I'm not trying to compete with Duke, okay, on a day-to-day basis, okay? So a lot of other players in between CAA basketball and ACC Duke basketball. And I think that I can recruit our program, our university can recruit enough good players in between that stratosphere to allow us over time to be able to compete in a CAA league. And that would definitely change the narrative in terms of HBCUs being at the table and having a chance to compete, you know, have a chance to go to the Sweet 16, or, you know, have a chance to have a successful basketball season and not just be considered, hey, the MEAC champion.
Now, obviously, from a basketball standpoint, the CAA is an outstanding conference. You know, there's been some NBA players that have come out of there in the past few years. Obviously, Hofstra had a few, Charleston Southern, Delaware. I mean, there's been a lot of great players to come out of that conference, man. And, you know, obviously, you know, last year, there were a lot of great teams. UNC Wilmington, Towson, Hofstra, Delaware all had great years last season. I mean, what are you most excited about from a basketball standpoint, being able to join the CAA, as well as obviously because Hampton is coming in as well, Monmouth is coming in, and Stony Brook is all joining the CAA next season. Obviously, they're also losing James Madison. But, you know, what about joining that conference from a basketball perspective just excites you the most?
You know, man, like I said, it's an opportunity. You know, everybody can win. You know, so right now, you know, an opportunity, you know, to have a MEAC champion, a SWAC champion, a CAA champion. That's three schools that could potentially, HBCUs that could potentially get to the NCAA tournament. We've never had that before. We've had two, you know what I mean, with the MEAC and the SWAC. But now, you know, you can have a MEAC champion, OVC. There's 10 Tennessee States, and also four. We have a chance to
get four teams in the NCAA tournament instead of three. So we're growing in terms of just that. For an example, you know, we're moving forward, even though everybody's not moving to the CAA. As a culture, you got an HBCU competing, two HBCUs competing in that league. That gives us another opportunity to get to the dance. But I'm excited about it, man. It's really been reflective in our recruiting. I think that we've really attacked it. And I think now it's just, you know, getting used to the lay of the land and continuing to recruit at a high level and going out there and competing.
Now, what has the support been like from the administration for you as a coach? Because obviously, you know, you're taking steps every year. You know, the Big South is a better league than the MEAC, and now the CAA is a better league than the Big South. And, you know, obviously for a coach, obviously, you know, you came in your first year, you were the MEAC coach of the year, your first year, you know, and each year, you know, the challenges have kind of gotten more and more. What has the support been like from the administration for you as a coach? Like, hey, coach, you know, we know that you know, taking these steps in these new leagues, but, you know, we're going to be behind you in this kind of transition period.
Yeah, it's been great. Like I said, the chancellor, it's his vision. His vision to take A&T academically and athletically to this place that – and be successful, not just take us there. He's been very clear about – I just don't want to go. He wants to go and be successful. And so I'm going to be remembered as the coach at A&T that really put the foundation of this thing together and execute. So I'm in the AD's office. I'm in administration's office telling them about ideas. This is what we need to do. If we want to compete at this level, we need to have this facility, this opportunity for our guys. And that's my job to make sure that they understand, because I'm the coach, I'm the expert in the basketball field. And so it's my job to educate the leaders of this thing on, hey, okay, we're moving over here. This is what we need, okay? We want to continue to recruit at a high level and even take that up. Well, I need X, Y, and Z to be added to our program. And so that's really been my job, man, just really orchestrating and making this program have what it takes on the foundation level so we can continue to move, so we can be successful in the CAA.
Now, you mentioned obviously the Raising Conference and what's that done from a recruiting standpoint and being able to recruit high level players, and that's something that's been reflected right away in the portal. Obviously, you guys have been able to land two impact transfers, Will Felton from Arizona State, and then Austin Johnson from UC Irvine. Also, you got two JUCO guys in Cam Woods and Love Bettis. I mean, you know, talk to me a little bit about, you know, just the spring that you guys are putting together so far, man. How excited you are about, you know, the class you guys have coming in for next season.
Hey, Drew, listen. You know, I know you got a lot of schools recruiting you, man. A lot of schools in the Northeast, you know, a lot of good coaches recruiting, you know, but the CAA, man, it's the 12th best league in the country. I mean, you know, some of these other schools are great schools, but you want to have a chance to play against some of the best competition in the country. VCU went to the Final Four. George Mason went to the Final Four. I mean, the CAA is a good league, man. I mean, if I come into your home and I'm telling you that you have a chance to play in the 12th best league in the country, and you're being recruited by the lower half of conferences in the country, all right, that's going to get you to say, you know, I'm taking Coach Jones' call tonight. You know, it's an HBCU, but they play in the CAA. You know what I mean? And you take that call, and the biggest advantage for A&T is if I get you on campus, it's going to be tough for you to say no. It's going to be real tough for you to say no because, you know, we have a great campus. We have an unbelievable environment. And the kids and the families that's looking for the academic piece, you're going to have the academic piece because we're ranked in those stratospheres, in those categories in terms of academics to back that up. And so it's like a no-lose situation for a certain individual. You're going to be able to get the academic piece, the basketball piece, and then the social piece, okay? Sometimes you can be recruited by a school and you don't get three out of the three. It could be a nice PWI, you know what I mean? It could have nice, shiny locker room, nice gym, nice practice facility, okay? But you're an individual that you want to have some social, you know what I mean? You want to have some connection with your people, you know what I mean? And so now with us going to the CAA, you get the best of all three situations.
And it's really been a good deal in recruiting. You know, I worked in high-level JUCO, and I worked at Northwest Florida State, where Cam Woods is from. And when I worked there as an assistant, man, the lowest league we sent players to was Conference USA the majority of the time. And so this is the first time I've been able to recruit a kid from Northwest Florida State at any job I've been at, not just HBCUs, but at the mid-level PWIs. It's tough to get those kids to come because they can go Conference USA. You know, they can go to the Big 12, to the SEC. You know, those guys are looking at high-level offers. And so getting Cam Woods was a big thing, and the same thing as Lev Bettis. You know, Lev Bettis at Coffeyville. I mean, it's the same thing. You know, those guys are able to get high-level Conference USA, American League offers. But we were able to get in there and, again, getting on campus and seeing it. And really enjoying it and feeling that they can be successful.
Now, Coach, man, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and go there since you kind of put it up on a platter, you know what I'm saying? And I've heard a lot of stories, you know, I've seen a lot of pictures and videos, you know what I'm saying? I've never been to AT myself, you know what I'm saying? But I've seen the pictures on Instagram, you know, I heard about G-Ho, greatest homecoming on earth for everybody that don't know, you know what I'm saying? I just wanna know, man, like, how many kids have you guys got, you know, brought on campus during G-Ho? That you guys try to aid for a big campus? I know obviously the springtime, that's in the fall, so obviously they didn't come on campus now, but I can't imagine coming on campus during that time in the fall and not committing. I feel like that's a cheat code for you guys to have that at your disposal. Because you bring a kid down there during that time, God bless him. God bless it, man. But I just want to talk to you guys about that, man, because you guys have a distinct advantage, you know, and being able to recruit at that school, man. You know what I'm saying? And I'll leave it at that for you to go ahead and.
I'm gonna surprise you guys. I'm gonna surprise you guys. All right, I'm gonna surprise you guys. We don't bring kids in. We don't bring in, like 2023. We didn't bring in a kid during G-Ho. Okay.
All right? And why not?
So. It's a couple of reasons behind the philosophy. So what we do during G-Ho is I invite every young kid in our state to come on an unofficial visit for G-Ho, because most kids, even though sometimes we assume, for a long time, we assume the African-American kid, and I went to HBCU, we assume that everybody knows what an HBCU is and that they've been on Coppin's campus or they've been on Morgan's campus. All right. So when you assume, you know what that you know what that ends up being, right? And yeah. So I said, if I can expose the young kids to A&T at the 10th grade, 9th grade, you know, 11th grade, so now they're unofficial A&T, they're at G-Ho, and their recruiting process starts. And now they're recruited by some of these other schools close. Our level, they're telling their parents, yo, I'm going to A&T. I'm going to A&T. I'm not going. I hear this other team call. I get it. I'm going to A&T. Coach wants me to come on an unofficial official visit. He's really recruiting me. I'm going to A&T. I was just at G-Ho. You know what I'm saying? G-Ho, for a kid that's coming out, you know, from a senior, at least is like a real special dude. You know what I'm saying? It's so hectic to get around. You can't get to restaurants, you can't get parking, you can't move around. And so I don't really sell G-Ho, okay? Because if you come to A&T on a normal day, you're going to see what you need to see. You know what I'm saying? You're going to see, like, G-Ho's over the top. You know, it's over the top. So if I'm talking to a kid, especially in the early signing period, and he's just talking, Coach, I want to come to G-Ho, man, then I'll make it happen, okay? If it's not, I'll get him to North Carolina Central's football game. You know what I'm saying? I'll get him to another game that we're going to have a great environment. It don't have to be over the top over here, because now you're just selling that piece of it. I want to sell everything. I want to sell the academics. I want to sell what men's basketball is doing. You know, everybody talks about G-Ho. You guys, just like you said, you guys didn't get a chance to come play in Club Corbett because we only played you guys one time that year.
And I hate that. I hate that.
And listen, G-Ho's great. G-Ho is great. But listen, if you come during basketball season and you come to a Central game or a Saturday game, you know what I mean? You're going to be like, yo, this is crazy. This is crazy. And I tell our coaches, our assistant coaches all the time, listen, when we're in recruiting battles, okay, yeah, you need to go watch some, you need to get on Synergy and see some of these universities that we're competing against, that they got the pictures of the one time they had their gym full, but they only averaged 250 fans during the regular season, and say, yo, listen, you want to play, who you want to play? You want to play in front of 250 people, or if you want to play in front of 3,000 people on a consistent basis? And that's what we can offer a kid. So yeah, GHO is an advantage. We talk about it a lot in terms of our presentation, but we don't oversell it because, you know, you can go on the internet and read about it and talk about it. It's kind of our special weapon.
Hey man, I'm gonna let AZ ask this question, man. But I mean, I will say this, man. I think it was a gift from the good Lord, man, that A&T never recruited me. You know what I'm saying? Because that would have been if I would have went to A&T for my 4 years. I don't know if I would still be, you know, this in the position I'm in today, man. As a media member, as a professional athlete, man, I don't know, man. I might have lost my mind, man.
you and me both. You and me both. But coach, man, I do have one question, man. Obviously, you know, I think in my opinion, one of the things that made the MEAC special was the rivalries, right? So Cobbin and Morgan was always the most fun game, you know. Bethune and Fan, man, was also one of those games that everybody got up for. And A&T and Central was arguably one of the best ones, if not the best ones, out of all those rivalries, man. I mean, what do you say to somebody who says, man, like, they're leaving the MEAC, man, those rivalries, we're not going to get to see those games, man. Like, what do you say to somebody who just is going to miss? I mean, you mentioned, man, like if you go to A&T home game, it's packed. No matter if you're playing Howard or Morgan or A&T or whoever, man. I mean, what do you say to somebody who might say, like, man, we're going to lose that piece of the camaraderie of the rivalry with A&T leaving and heading to the CAA?
You know, man, I got a two-part answer for you. Two-part answer. I'm going to talk about the first one. I'm going to talk to what Andrew said about losing his mind. So I went to an HBCU. I went to South Carolina State, and at the time, we were the North Carolina Central. We were the A&T. We were the Norfolk. Okay, we were winning a championship every other year. Okay, so I have a different background in terms of perspective. So, Drew, I'll say this to you. Every Saturday at Clemson, every Saturday at Virginia Tech, all right, every Saturday at North Carolina, whatever high major school you mention, it's GHO. It's GHO. Ohio State has 100,000 kids on campus. All right, so if you're a football, basketball player on Ohio State's campus and you're a high-profile dude, all right, you can lose your mind every day. So I hate in recruiting when PWI or even ourselves say that if I go to A&T, if I go to Central, if I go to Coppin, because Beyonce, Rihanna, and all of them are on campus, all right, and it's crazy, and they dress and they looking real nice, that us as African Americans or whoever's on the team, we can't focus enough, all right, to be successful in that space academically or athletically. That's a myth that people use, all right, against us in a nice way. Oh man, you want to go to A&T? Oh man, they got girls dancing on the sidelines. Oh, it's not negative recruiting, all right, but it's trying to paint the picture like, yo, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? You want these kids, you want them to go to a 70,000 campus, all right, student campus, when they got people that's stalking them? That's better? That's better for them to go to that institution than to come to A&T because we got dancers on the sideline? That's a false negative. All right, that's false. You know what I mean? That needs to be on Donkey of the Day on the Breakfast Club, all right, with Charlemagne. You know what I mean? Like that's what I call that. You know what I mean? And then the second question, to get to what you said, I don't think we lose those rivalries. You know, Coach Moulton and myself, we're talking about getting each other back on the schedule next year once we can kind of figure out, you know, the last 2 years, we've been trying to move from a MEAC schedule, all right, and kind of make it more so look like a Big South schedule. You know, so MEAC schedule, we playing 7-8 guaranteed games by the time all of the teams limp in to conference play. The highest wins, 7 wins. Somebody coming in with 7 wins, somebody coming in with 1 win, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and I always tell people, MEAC play, once you get into the mix of it and everybody is feeling good about themselves now and injuries from the preseason, yo, it's good basketball in the MEAC that can compete with any other low to mid major league in the country once we get into conference play, all right, and everybody's feeling good about themselves in terms of basketball, right? And so trying to make that thing look like a Big South schedule last year, and then now the CAA, they only play 3 guaranteed games, 3. And so I had to tell our administration, listen, hey, listen, I know we've been playing 6 guaranteed games in the MEAC. I know you said that I only had to play 5 in the Big South. Hey, man, if we want to win and be successful in the CAA, I can only play 3 high major games. That's all. That's all. So as we move, we got to transition and we got to start to look and do what these other leagues are doing so we could be successful and so that I'm not a MEAC team in the CAA. Because if you make me play 7 guaranteed games, then my record's going to look the same coming into conference play in the CAA as it did in the MEAC. So that's not that, that's the detriment to what we would be able to do. You know what I mean? And so, but now we've transitioned, we've started to try to make sure what we do look more like what the teams in the league that we're in are doing.
Hey, man, because the fans need that central ante game, man. We need that for the culture, man. We need it.
It's definitely, man. It's something, you know, definitely next year, I think we're going to get it back, you know, in terms of whether it's a home and home in the same year, whether it's a neutral site game that ESPN can pick up. But definitely, man, it's something that it helps everybody's recruiting because that ESPN spot that it's on, man, it was always big time.
Now, I want to respond to your statement first, and then I'm going to ask my next question. But I never thought about it like that, man. When you said, like, that can kind of be a negative thing, because for me, I would love to go to A&T. You know what I'm saying? So I hope I make it seem like, well, I wouldn't with it, because I would love for A&T to offer me. I would love that. Mm-hmm. But I actually never thought about that, how that could be used as, like, a negative. You know what I'm saying? I always thought that, like, for me, in my opinion, you could ask Ace. For me, I'm like, yo, A&T is, like, up here for schools mm-hmm. that I would want to go to if I was a recruit, because, like, man, you will enjoy yourself in college. You know what I'm saying? Like, just like you said, you can enjoy yourself at Maryland or Clemson or things like that. But I should never thought, I mean, obviously it's probably different from a coach. Maybe the coach is probably throwing that out there as like, oh, don't do that. You know what I'm saying? But you know, for me, I never thought about it like that, man. So I appreciate you for giving that kind of alternate perspective. You know what I'm saying? My question is for you, you know, since Ace asked about kind of like you mentioned the environments in a lot of the old HBCU games that you guys played. What was the environment like when you guys were in the Big South and you're playing a Gardner Webb home game or Presbyterian? What was the environment like? Did the students still come out for those games? Do you feel like it kind of lost some of the juice? Like, what was that like?
I thought we still had a good, we still average about 2,500 a game on the ride. So the Big South has a lot of close schools. So High Point, we had a good crowd, 3,500, around 3,500. Campbell is close, so that was a good crowd. We still got a good crowd. It depends on, and a lot of these things depend on how many home games you get during the year. And so we only played one home game versus a Division I team before conference play at home. You know what I'm saying? And again, that's another HBCU structure thing, because everybody wants us to come play those guaranteed games on the road. You know what I'm saying? And so, and then the Big South was different because seeing the MEAC, when you play those home games, you always had Thursday, Saturday, or right. Saturday, Monday. So, you know, you had 2 home games in a row. So you can get momentum, or you may have that time on your schedule where you got 4 games in a row. See, the Big South, they didn't want you to create any momentum. So it was one home game, one game on the road. One home game, one game on the road. So it was it's no continuity, no continuity. You know what I'm saying? You got to wait a whole nother 7 days before you play again. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, in terms of the structure of it, it was a little bit different. But in the atmosphere, what happened was all of the teams in the Big South, they couldn't wait to come play at A&T because they get to play in front of some fans. You know what I'm saying? And so it turned into one of those things, but they coming in playing their best game coming in A&T because they ready to play in front of some fans.
Yeah. Now, Coach, we talked about a little bit about this before we got on air, but you mentioned the NIL, man, and it's literally changing the game of college basketball right now. I mean, you're seeing it everywhere at every level, man. Teams that have been able to figure it out have been able to get some great recruits, man. Teams that haven't been able to figure it out have been struggling, man. I mean, how have you guys kind of begun to navigate that space at A&T, man? And, you know, what do you think you guys are going to be able to do, you know, for your athletes going forward?
You know, man, you know, first and foremost, you know, as a coach, you know, when we're recruiting guys that have the potential to capitalize on the name, image, and likeness, then I'm all for it. You know what I'm saying? Like I tell the guys, listen, you know, you can get that name, likeness, and image, but you got to perform on this court. Yes, nobody paying you money. Ain't nobody going to pay you no money now if you ain't getting nothing done on this court. You know what I'm saying? And you put yourself out there to get some money, you know, from a corporation or a business that they want you to represent. They don't want nobody who ain't going to be eligible next semester either.
Yep.
So I tell them, hey, listen, there's extra pressure on you guys to continue to be good, all right? Because you sign a deal and you ain't putting in the work, you're going to lose your deal. You sign a deal and you ain't doing what you need to do in the classroom, you're going to lose your deal and you're going to be exposed. And so I tell our guys, hey, listen, it helps the program reinforce what we're trying to do. Make sure you're doing the right thing. Make sure you're carrying yourself the right way, because if you get somebody that wants to invest in you, all right, you don't want to throw that away, acting stupid at a party, all right, doing something stupid domestically, whatever it is, all right, you want to protect your brand because that's what you're building. You know what I'm saying? And I'll say this, it hasn't hit, all right, hasn't hit where we are yet, all right, to where the first question in a recruit conversation with us is, Coach, how much I'm getting, all right? It hadn't hit us yet. And I tell our administration, I tell our AD, it has not hit us yet. What we've been able to capitalize is because of NIL and the transfer portal, right? We've been able to get a high school kid or transfer that normally we wouldn't be able to attack early in the process because they have recruiting from such high level schools. But these high level schools now are in a bidding war for some of the top transfers in the country. Some of these dudes aren't even getting calls. So they're sitting waiting by the phone, like, man, damn, are they gonna call? Are they recruiting me? And so they ain't calling. So A&T is slooping in there and we're doing a good job relation-wise and being able to capitalize. That's how we are kind of navigating that space right now. But it's an everyday process for me and our staff to try to understand how this thing is working. I just listened to an interview last night with Nick Saban, and Nick Saban, I know what he said, all right, might be controversial based on, you know, because he was saying something about Jackson State and he was saying something about Texas A&M. But that's good. I'm not a coach at any one of those schools. I heard what he said about how those schools are structuring, all right, for these kids to be able to capitalize, all right? And I listened to what he said. I'm like, dang, that's how they're doing it? Because nobody knows, like, what's going on. We just know that some guys are getting paid a lot of money. And basketball is different from football, right? Basketball guys are personable. You can see our faces, all right? We're on social media. People recognize us. Our culture in terms of the sport is more out there, all right? In football, it's more so, you know what I'm saying? You don't really know. These guys have helmets on. Like, you know the quarterback. You may know the running back. You know, you may know somebody who is a defense, you know, really good on defense, but you don't really know all of the players on the football team. You know what I'm saying? And so what happens in basketball. One dude goes out there and says, "Yo, man, I got this deal, $400,000." Say what? $400,000? So the rest of these cats, they take an official visit. They're like, "Yo, what's good with the $400,000?" You know what I'm saying? Like, it's already out there. You know what I mean? And so now the coach or the staff has to answer to that. And it really didn't happen like that until basketball season. You know what I mean? The basketball guys, you know, basketball is just so, man, it's so dynamic, man. People don't understand. It's a two-semester sport. You got to respect that. The athletes that's going through that. Guys are talented enough. It's been proven that there may be guys talented enough to go from high school to the league. You think about this. I'm a high school player, and I go to college. And I only got to go to school for less than 365 days, and I can go from being dirt poor and living in a two-bedroom apartment with my six brothers and sisters to being a multimillionaire in less than a year? That's crazy. That's crazy.
Crazy.
And so our sport is so dynamic in that piece that, you know, everybody's grinding, trying to make it out and get a chance to be a pro, play, live out their dreams. And you telling me, coach, the rules say I got to go to college for a year. Okay, cool. All right. But you telling me I could make a million, I could be a millionaire and change my whole generation, all right, in less than 365 days? That's crazy. And that's why we got to get the rules right. And that's why as basketball players, especially young African-American guys, we got to be able to learn financial literacy, understand how we can capitalize that and make that money last longer than some of our guys in the past that they, because they want to get us on YouTube and Yahoo and Gmail and say, "Oh man, he had 300 million. He broke now." You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the story they want. So we got to capitalize so those stories don't happen anymore.
Now, Coach, man, obviously, you know, despite the fact you're not coaching in the MEAC anymore, man, like you said, you went to an HBCU, you know, you're coaching the MEAC. So I want to ask you this question, kind of one more broader question, man. But obviously, you know, in recent years, you guys left the MEAC. Hampton left the MEAC. Bethune and Fam left the MEAC. I think, you know, there's been rumors that Howard may even be leaving the MEAC soon. So I think right now, it stands, the MEAC has like 8 teams. And there's a lot of people who are talking about, man, like, what does the MEAC have to do to kind of sustain, man? Is the MEAC going to fold? Like, kind of where is this going, you know, forward? Because, I mean, obviously the MEAC has been very important to HBCU basketball over the years, man, just a lot of history in the league and things like that. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Like, what do you think the MEAC has to do to sustain, you know, if we get to a point where the MEAC folds? Like, what do you think that would mean for HBCU basketball? And I don't know, I kind of wanted to hear your thoughts on that because, you know, it's kind of a tough situation right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think that the bottom line, you can't be stagnant. You know what I mean? And I'm not being critical of anybody, but the MEAC has had success. It has had some great teams, some teams that have done great things, accomplished. I mean, a MEAC team is on the NCAA video when you win a championship. You know, when Hampton beat, who they beat? Missouri that year. You know what I'm saying? Oh, Norfolk beat Missouri. Coppin beat South Carolina. Like, listen, those things should be always remembered. And I think the MEAC as a conference should have probably been a little bit more elevated from years of success, man. And I think being stagnant really has put it in a bad situation. And I'm just hoping that the new leadership has a broad vision, man, to take the league and offer some of these universities some different things. You guys that play in the MEAC shouldn't have had to deal with the same gift that I got as a player. You know what I'm saying? Like, it should be better. It should be better. You know what I mean? And that's not knocking the MEAC, because I always say this, people want to paint the brush and talk about the MEAC's about to fold. OVC got issues, Atlantic Sun got issues, Big South got issues. Let's stop just saying we got issues. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's what the media wants to paint. And then once the media paints it,
our community, we jump on it like we're the only one that have issues. We're not the only one that got issues. A lot of these other conferences are having major conversations because they're afraid of their conference losing members, all right, and not being able to sustain membership. But in terms of your question for the MEAC, I think, you know, I think the only thing the SWAC did, man, was they brought in some new leadership into their office, some younger people with different visions, and they started messing around with things, and they kind of tried to gain some momentum. And I think they did, when they did that, you know, they stole two teams from the MEAC. I mean, FAMU and Bethune, man, if I was the commissioner of the MEAC, man, I'm flying down to Daytona. I'm flying down to Tallahassee. It's no way you're leaving the MEAC. No way I'm letting you leave. I got to make something happen so you guys don't leave the MEAC and go to the SWAC. You know what I'm saying? But I just think we just got to have a different perspective, think outside the box, and make it the MEAC a destination, man, that some of these other schools can come to.
One quick follow-up on that, Coach. What are your thoughts on the MEAC potentially adding non-HBCUs? Do you think that should be an all-HBCU conference? Like, if it comes to a point where, you know, they got to extend some invites, there was rumors that they reached out to Chicago State, for example. It's not an HBCU. It is a predominantly Black school from what I understand, but it's not an HBCU. What do you think about, like, do you think that would, like, mess with the footprint of the league if they started adding schools that weren't HBCUs into the MEAC?
We can't have it on one end and not have it on the other end, right? If North Carolina A&T was able to grow 50 years down the line, able to grow investments, kids academically, athletically, and the ACC called and said, man, listen, we see what you guys are doing. We want to get you guys to the ACC. That's what our people want, because they want to be able for us to recruit Zion. They want us to be able to recruit these high-profile guys that come out of our community. What makes that reality? That if a HBCU was equipped and able to sustain and play in the ACC, all right? So if we would take it on that end, we got to be able to take it on the other end, and maybe some of the PWIs or these other schools, traditional schools, are trying to move up. Maybe they're not at a level of an HBCU and they want to have aspirations to be D1. They maybe need to come into a MEAC or a SWAC footprint. It's not going to stop our HBCUs from being HBCUs, you know what I'm saying? But it is going, it's still going to be the MEAC. The MEAC still going to be considered HBCU league, you know what I'm saying? The SWAC, nothing's ever going to change the footprint of the SWAC, the MEAC, the CIAA, and the SIAC. In history books, that's what we came from. The best of the best went to those institutions long ago. We continue to move and be able to move to different leagues. So yeah, I don't have an issue with that.
Now, Coach, man, we've been asking coaches, man. We need Your one recruiting story, man. Your funniest recruiting story, wild recruiting story, man, from when you were an assistant, man. Whenever, if you had a one of your assistants on your staff that had a funny recruiting story, man, you got to have your most memorable recruiting experience, man. We done heard some crazy ones, man. So we need you to think outside the box on this one.
Oh, my gosh, man. There's so many dudes. Let me see, man. So I think I got to go back. I got to go back to JUCO.
So I know we had some wild ones in JUCO.
I gotta go back to JUCO. I'm recruiting a kid. His name is LaShante Harris. He's from New Hope, Mississippi. And he's 6'9", 240 pounds. Country dude. All right. And so I'm talking to my boss. I'm like, man, listen, we gotta go get LaShante. So LaShante is about 5.5 hours away from Florida where I'm at. And so I'm going up to see him, you know what I mean, a couple of times a week, going to see all of his games. These cats are asking me, you know, coaches are asking me, man, how you getting here, man? You got a private jet? I'm like, no, I don't got no private jet. I'm driving this Crown Victoria, and I'm drinking this 5-hour energy to get here to see this kid every dang game he's playing, you know what I mean? And so recruiting the kid, and, you know, So I established a relationship with the kid. I'm talking to the kid. I start getting calls from SEC schools, Auburn, Mississippi State. Like, yo, man, how are you talking to the kid? The kid doesn't talk to anybody. Like, you know, how do you have a relationship with the dude? I'm like, man, I'm just talking to the kid. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why he likes me. And so I'm recruiting the dude. And, you know, he goes to the City of Palms. Dude scores like 35 points, has 12 rebounds against Greg Monroe and Edgar Vargas. Those dudes are going to Georgetown, going to LSU, going to Florida. And so I think I got the dude. And one Sunday I get a call, man. He said, Coach, I just came from Memphis. I said, Memphis? How'd you get to Memphis? He's like, yeah, Coach Cal told me to come on up, man, and visit, you know what I'm saying? And so he went down there and visited, man, and come to find out, man, you know, he didn't have the grades. That's why I was going to come to JUCO. And next thing I know, man, you know, he ends up going to Chris Chaney and the prep school that all those Memphis dudes go to. And so we lose out on him, you know what I'm saying? And so he's the top, he goes from basically unknown to ended up being like the 14th ranked player in the country by the time the season was over. And I was so disappointed. I was like, man, this is my guy, this is my shot. You know what I mean? I'm beside being a top 10 dude. You know what I mean? I'm on my way as a coach. And it just got taken away from me just like that, man. But, you know, I always look back at it now because, you know, he's on, you know, he had a chance to go overseas and play. And it just shows you, man, like it's all about relationships, man, all about relationships. And you just gotta go out there and do your job, man. I know that's not a funny story, but for me, that was one of the better recruiting stories for me.
Hey, man, I know you probably aren't the first guy, man, to lose out on a kid to Coach Calipari, you know what I'm saying? So it's no shame in that, you know what I'm saying?
So, man, Cal came in there, man. I'm like, come on, man. What's going on, man? Like, the kid needs to come to JUCO. We got a plan for him. You know what I'm saying?
All right, Coach, man. We definitely want to thank you for your time, man. It's been a lot of fun, man. And it's been awesome to see what you've been able to do at A&T, man, since becoming the head coach, man. Me and Drew are extremely proud of what you've been able to do with the program, man. Extremely excited to see what you're going to continue to do at A&T this season in the CAA, man. And that me and Drew are definitely gonna be rooting for you guys and watching you guys this season, man. So keep elevating, man, and keep proving to people, man, that HBCUs and that people like us can do the same thing that everybody else can do, man. So keep up the good work, Coach. Appreciate your time.
Definitely, man. Kudos to you guys. Keep doing your thing. We all can live. We all can be successful, man. And we're going to keep on doing our thing here. You said the right word, elevate, man. That's what we're trying to do. What's the topic of discussion we're talking about? Take your best shot. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Coach.
You beating on me. I can tell. It's time to get a check, boy. Check, boy. You want a sideline. You ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You beating on me. I can tell. What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy.